From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. According to new hazard maps that came out last year, about half the buildings in downtown Juneau face a moderate to severe threat of landslides or avalanches. These new maps haven't been adopted yet, but Juneau City Manager is hopeful that will happen in the new year. But it's tricky because the maps don't describe the timing or impact of potential events. KTOO's Anna Canny has more.
The Juneau Assembly will try to adopt new hazard maps again next year after making little progress this year. City Manager Rory Watt said there's been disagreement on one central topic.
Fundamentally, the question is, how much do we know about risk?
The new maps were developed to replace the city's existing hazard maps, which are more than 30 years old. For some neighborhoods, they outline landslide hazards for the first time, like in Star Hill, where some properties went from no slide hazard at all to severe zones. Others were upgraded from moderate to severe. Those changes have been tough to understand for many downtown homeowners.
I think we started the hazard mapping update very innocently, right? We have old bad maps. We got a FEMA grant. Let's do new maps. And then they came back with new landslide hazard mapping information that doesn't square up with the common person's assessment of risk.
That's partly because hazard mapping can't tell people when landslides will happen. Instead, they describe factors that make a given area more prone to landslides. Another thing that makes the maps hard to comprehend is that human lifespans don't line up with the timescales of avalanches and landslides. A landslide might happen every 10 to 100 years in a moderate zone. That means someone could live in their house for decades without seeing one. The maps don't assess the likelihood and consequences of potential landslides. And without definitive information on safety, Watt says policymakers are hesitant to impose land use restrictions.
What's our rational basis as a municipal government to tell somebody, you're, you know, high, medium, low, severe, but we can't tell you about the probability of that? By adopting regulations, we're going to be fundamentally telling people, you know, you can or can't develop more and less depending on these maps.
Juneau's current land use code limits development in severe zones. That will likely carry over when the new maps are adopted, and there will be even more properties in those severe zones. Watt believes that adopting the maps will require some sort of compromise. That might mean changing the proposed maps by inviting public feedback, or maybe only adopting some subset of the maps. Either way, he hopes the Assembly will make progress on them in the first half of 2023. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
An 8-bridge project over the Good River near Gustavus has finally drawn to a close. It's part of a national fish passage program. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the project in southeast Alaska should help juvenile fish maneuver through the waterway.
The land around Gustavus doesn't stay still. It's constantly rising from what's known as isostatic rebound. Basically, as a nearby glacier retreats, the pressure on the land lessens and it rises. The land in Gustavus is rising faster than anywhere else in the world, about an inch a year.
And it's been doing that for 200 and whatever years.
Since the mid-1700s, to be more precise. Mike Halbert is a longtime fishing guide in Gustavus.
I've been fishing there for 30 years, so seen 3, 4, 5 feet of difference. And you can see it on charts since it was charted in the 60s.
The rising land is one reason the federal government spent the last decade fixing 8 bridges over the Good News River and its tributaries. The funding comes from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's National Fish Passage Program, which received $3.5 million for Alaska projects in the bipartisan federal infrastructure law. The Good River runs from Glacier Bay National Park to Icy Straits. In recent decades, while the land continued to rise, so did the metal culverts. But the streams kept cutting into the land, causing the culverts to overhang the water. That's a problem when they're home to salmon, Dolly Varden, and cutthroat trout.
If the water was where it came out of the culvert, if it was creating a waterfall, they considered it a hindrance for the young coho to move upstream. They'd be reluctant to jump, unlike the adult.
Halbert says the Good River doesn't have a lot of fish in it. It isn't nearly as big as the nearby Salmon River, where most locals and tourists go. The Good River is small and runs along roads, past town, and through a mudflat. Another local, fly fishing guide Natalie Vax, says mostly kids fish the Good River for salmon and trout.
Kids catching cutthroats and dollies and pinks and silver on that little culvert side ditch thing on the side of the main road. There are a few spots where sometimes fish do gather.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service hopes the new bridges will allow more fish to spawn in the smaller stream. U.S. Assistant Secretary of the Interior Shannon Estenose oversees fish, wildlife, and parks.
These projects are all about kind of what the name suggests, removing barriers to flow, removing barriers to fish passage, often updating either outdated or malfunctioning infrastructure that are impeding fish passage.
Estenose is a civil engineer. She says when engineers are designing infrastructure like culverts and bridges, they can't always predict what will happen decades later. Sometimes the material fails or outlives its useful life. But the fish passage projects aren't just about saving fish, she says.
They often fix multiple problems at once. I'm finding as I'm traveling across the country that we might be helping fish, but we're often also improving flood protection, or we're making it safer for folks to paddle the river to, you know, fish on the river as well. And apparently this has been an ancillary benefit for the Good River.
Fishing guide Mike Halbert doesn't see the local bridges making much difference for his industry, but he says it's a huge improvement for traffic across the waterways.
Obviously, the people that are working on the construction is a big benefit.
The infrastructure law included $600,000 for the Good River's final bridge. The entire fish passage project totaled $1.76 million. Other fish passage projects in Alaska that received federal infrastructure funding included $1.3 million for the Little Tonsina River in the Valdez-Cordova borough and $1.6 million for the Tionic Creek on the Kenai Peninsula. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
And it's been nearly 3 years since the deadly sinking of the FV Scandies Rose off the Alaskan Peninsula. Now pieces of the ship have started washing ashore, KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
Seven men were on board the Scandies Rose when she went down during stormy weather in the waters off Sutwick Island near Chignik on New Year's Eve 2019. Two survivors were plucked from the water in the hours after the vessel sank by Coast Guard rescue crews, but five crew members were never found and presumed dead. Those included the ship's captain, Gary Cobbin Jr., and his son, David Cobbin, both from Kodiak. Jerry Cobbin Kanagan is Gary Cobbin Jr.'s sister. She says in the years since, the family sent a remote-operated vehicle down to the seafloor to survey the wreckage.
And so I have a whole video of the boat on the bottom with the pots, and the buoys had popped up out of the pots and made like a kelp forest of buoys.
The ship was en route from Kodiak to fishing grounds in the Bering Sea and stacked with nearly 200 crab pots when it sank. Now those buoys and other pieces of the ship have started washing ashore. Kanagan says her family was contacted earlier this month by a fisherman from Chignik who found two buoys and a bait tow. He flew them back to the family in Kodiak.
That was just such a heartfelt moment to know that this fisherman, he recognized for what they were, and then he didn't have Facebook, so he used somebody else's Facebook page to get in touch with me. And then I met them here in Kodiak and picked them up, and that's just like, thank you. I can't thank them enough for that.
Kanagan says they've received some of her brother's personal belongings from storage yards in Kodiak and Dutch Harbor over the years, but finding something from the ship was different.
When I touched those buoys, it was like getting a hug from my brother. It was pretty emotional moment.
A report from the National Transportation Safety Board later concluded that inaccurate stacking instructions, particularly in icing conditions, for the ship's crab pots and more extreme weather than predicted, likely caused the Scandies Rose's sinking. The NTSB made a series of recommendations to multiple agencies based on its findings. Kanagan says she plans to reunite washed-up items from the sunken vessel with the family members of other men who went down with the ship. Her brother was colorblind, so the big buoys from the Scandies Rose are lime green for him to pick out on the sea. They have the letters SR written on them in black with the ship's fish and game number 35318. There's also smaller buoys with the fish and game number on them that may float to the surface.
Some of those are the trailer buoys. Some of those are red, and some of those are white.
She says anyone who finds something they think is from the ship can find her on Facebook and send her a message or contact her via email. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
You're listening to KTOO.